Hey, how's everyone doing today? It's 25 July out here in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And we're going to have, this is going to be one of our member podcast recordings, but this one's a little unique. And then not only is he a member, but he's also in the cigar industry as well. This is Nick Church here.
Brian Brown.
And this is a podcast for Sailors and Sticks. So today we have Rick Charles with us.
RCB.
Also known as RCB. Rick Charles, bitch.
Rick Charles, bitch.
Something like that. Rick is the Director of International Markets for Ventura Cigar Company, which includes an array of cigars that I'm sure he'll explain later, but one of which that you see us promote a lot is the Psycho Series. Real good cigar there. So, Rick, we're glad to have you here. So you know, Rick lives in Kentucky.
Yeah, man.
And he came out here. He messaged me about 2 weeks ago and was like, hey, the wife needs to get out of the house and needs to go to the beach. And he knew we were out here. So we went ahead and we're stealing him on his last day of his vacation over here to get a little trip. So, Rick, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself to the podcast world.
Right on. Like you said, my name's Rick Charles, and I'm the Director of International Markets for Ventura Cigar and Cretec International, which is the parent company. So I also manage all of our military business. And one of the side reasons I came out here was to visit we supply all the cigars to the Navy worldwide. Every brand, every style, because the company, our distribution arm is Phillips & King. And they're a cigar distributor for 104 years, so. Came out to meet with some of the reps out here and look at some of the locations out at Oceana.
And go ahead and say yours at this point as I described it.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
I told you not to walk in there, man.
We got some work to do. Well, you know, I heard some stuff, man, that's going on in Oceana.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got a little bit of work to do. So I'll be back in a month. So we can do this again.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. All right, so yeah, so anyone out here in Hampton Roads knows, you know, that most of the bases here have some sort of humidor, walk-in humidor, and, you know, one thing that we stress with Rick, we did a Zoom call with Rick about 3 months ago, the first time he kind of became part of this, and that's one thing, yeah, he was like, hey, where you guys got your cigars at? You know, I'm a distributor of the bases and stuff, and we said, we don't go on bases to get cigars, but Rick's, we're going to work with Rick, and hopefully saves and sticks, And Rick can maybe change that. Maybe in the next coming years we can make that a place where active duty actually wants to go to buy the cigars.
And for you guys out on other bases, feel free to reach out to the group and let us know what bases are slacking, which ones aren't. Just we got to feed that information back to Rick so we can make those changes.
Yeah, even if they're looking for a certain stick.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me know, you know, because I'm the category captain there. I mean, I decide what goes in those humidors. I set the planograms.
That's perfect. So, all right. So, all right, you guys holler at Sailors and Sticks if you want to get a cigar that you don't see being held. And I can hear about 15 of y'all right now saying, Leaf by Oscar, Leaf by Oscar. But anyway. All right, Rick, so how long have you been at Ventura?
10 years almost.
10 years.
Yeah.
Okay. How'd you get hooked up with that? How'd that happen?
Dude, that's a crazy story. Before that, if you'd have told me 15 years ago that I was going to be in the cigar business, I'd have said, you're fucking nuts. I'd have never believed it.
It's a hobby for a job.
Is it G-rated or R-rated?
No,
man.
I can do my shit.
What about our logo says where you're
at? Right on.
You're good, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. I was smoking cigarettes 20 years ago. 2 packs a day. And I found this product called Swedish Snus. Or Snus. And they weren't really selling it in the U.S. yet. You know, and this was probably 15 years ago is when I really found snus. And I was like, why aren't they selling this in the U.S.? So I called all the people manufacturing it in Sweden and Denmark. And I'm like, why don't you guys sell this stuff in the U.S.? And they're like, we don't know how. U.S. is a big market. So me and another guy that I hooked up with, we partnered and he opened a distribution house in Pennsylvania, and I ran all of the distribution and sales nationwide.
So can you explain what a snus is?
Yeah, it's real big in Norway, too, right?
Yeah. It's Scandinavian. Yep. It's been made for 200 years. Yeah, Swedish snus is, I'm going to show you. I have it with me. It's a little pouch of tobacco.
Okay, so it's like a Skull Bandit.
It's very similar to Skull Bandit. Yep. The difference is how they process it. This is steam pasteurized. And you fuckers thought we were going to talk about cigars. Yeah. We will, I promise. Got to have the backstory, you know?
Yeah.
And so this shit is steam pasteurized, and, you know, just like your milk and cheese, and it kills all the carcinogens that grow on tobacco.
Huh.
It really inhibits how the rate of growth. I mean, anything you heat up grows a TSNA, which is a tobacco-specific nitrosamine. That's the cancer-causing agent in tobacco, right?
Do they sell that without the pouch, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that before. It's like more like dirt.
No, it looks just like mud. Yeah, and it does.
So it's a chewing tobacco, if you will. Mm-hmm. But
spitless, very discreet. Put it in your upper lip. No spitting.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's steam pasteurized, you can swallow the spit. It's fine.
Wow.
It's not like dip, man. Dip tears my stomach up, you know?
Because I know I've seen, me too. I tried to dip about 3 times when I was in sub school in Groton, and I think I threw up each time, and I said, all right, that's not for me.
Cold.
So, anyway. I can't
We're not going to smoke
Okay. Put it in here.
So every time we went to Norway on the boat, I know that was a big thing, is guys on the boat would buy dip, and they thought they were buying dip, but they were buying snus.
Yep.
So they weren't used to it, so they would be like, what the fuck is this?
And, you know, per gram, snus has more nicotine in it than dip does, generally, yeah.
Cool.
Per gram.
So anyways, you get involved in the snus.
Yeah, so business. We started this snus business, right? Yeah. And we started doing this shit.
Yeah.
And it started getting big. I had to get us licensed for taxation in all 50 states, which took me 6 months, because I'd never done anything like that before. Before that, I was in advertising. Tobacco, that shit was new to me. So I got it done, and I realized shortly thereafter in the next year that we needed a master distributor because, you know, we didn't have enough capital or bodies to go out and actually sell this stuff.
You guys hear that real quick? It's for all you guys that have these great ideas for these products that me and Brian should be making.
Yeah.
We don't have this shit like in a warehouse in the back of my house right now.
Oh, we don't have capital to do
so
it.
So we feel what you're talking about, Rick.
Yeah. So you guys, I spent many nights boxing shit up myself and mailing it on my own dime. Yeah. And I know what you're, I feel you. I still do that. Yeah. When I hold contests on like cigar contests or Psycho 7 and shit on Instagram or whatever, and I get 25 winners, guess who's mailing that shit out?
At your barn there.
Yeah. Me, man. I'm doing it at the house, and I'm busy. So, yeah. I mean, that's a pain in the ass. We all have other lives. But
I hear you.
So I ended up using Cru-Tech and Phillips & King as my master distributor in the U.S. So they distributed for me for several years. I didn't work for them. They were my distributor.
Yeah.
And I would go to trade shows with them and everything. And I tell you, man, they're just great people. And I ended up, we were looking at doing a joint venture where we manufacture some of these snus brands in the U.S. We were talking to the manufacturers, trying to put a joint venture company together, and never could get everybody to the table, and ended up, we just turned over and for a dime or two, you know, the distribution rights for snus in the U.S. to Cru-Tech and Phillips & King. And the next morning, I'm sitting at home, and I looked at my wife, I said, you know, shit, I'm unemployed. It's the first time in 20 years I've ever been unemployed. And she goes,
bitch.
Yeah. She's like, damn. She goes, that's true. She goes, I gotta go to work. I'm like, well, okay, see ya. Like 2 days later, Cru-Tech called me and they're like, hey, why don't you come out and run this whole smokeless division for us? So I did. I went out, met with them, talked to them. I already knew these guys. I've been around them for, you know, 3 or 4 years already.
Okay.
So I knew them all.
And they knew you.
Yeah, they knew me. Actually, I got my nickname before... from them before I actually started working with them. Yeah, we were in a boardroom meeting one time and we were talking stuff about taxation and smokeless tobacco. I don't remember what the exact topic was.
Fuck taxes, by the way.
Yeah, it's unconstitutional. Yeah. Paying income tax.
A whole other conversation we can get on.
Yeah, we can do that again. We'll
talk about that later.
You know, they said, why we got to do it this way? And I said, because I'm Rick Charles, bitch. And the chairman of our company goes, holy shit, that's your nickname. Rick Charles, bitch. RCB. I still get emails.
But it's good. It's a good one, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with Seinfeld?
Oh, yeah.
Because you could have been Bubba the Monkey.
Yeah. Could have been Bubba the Monkey. You know, and the whole RCB, I've been saying, I'm Rick James, bitch. Me and my wife, we love Chappelle's show, you know.
Yeah, man.
I mean, Jesus Christ, Chappelle makes me die. And Chappelle, you know, he did his old Rick James thing, you know, cocaine's a hell of a drug. You know, and everybody knew how crazy Rick James was.
Yeah.
And I just kind of been saying that. I walked around my house saying I'm RCB for years before the company started saying this, you know?
Yeah.
Because I would say it. My kids, only when I was around my kids, my wife made me say, I'm Rick Charles, baby.
But you can have a way worse nickname. It's
she knew what I meant. Yeah. I always tell people, no, it's Rick Charles, comma, bitch.
So how did that translate? So it's kind of, you started advertising, did the smokeless thing,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, so these guys hire you, you're unemployed 48 hours, give you a job, and then was it to roll into the cigar, because
how did you get into a career?
Yeah, like a career.
Yeah, well, I've always liked cigars. I've always smoked cigars. I didn't really know cigars as well as I thought until I worked for Pretec and Phillips and King. And once I started with them, I started learning a lot more about cigars, meeting the other manufacturers, you know, Jonathan Drew's a dear friend, Matt Booth, we were just talking about, Rocky, you know, just Nick Perdomo, so many people that, even though we're competitors, we're dear friends, and each one of them imparts wisdom.
Seems like a friendly market.
It is, dude. Let me tell you, it's a really close-knit group, and even though we are competitors, you know, everybody gets along. I mean, when we go out, shit, I go out with Tom Lazuka and from CLE, and we cut loose, man. We have fun together.
That's awesome.
You know, the way I really got into the cigars, though, was I came up with the whole idea of, because I'm ex-Navy.
Yeah.
You know, used to be ET3 Charles here. So I just was, we were looking for new revenue streams, and we were sitting in the boardroom one day, and I was like, you know, why don't we sell the military? The name says Phillips and King International, Pretec International.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, don't know. We never looked at that. Figure it out. So I did. And once I figured it out, it was kind of like, boom, it's your baby now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really was forced into the cigar industry by that, you know, discovery of how to get the contract to the Navy business. And we, you know, for those listening, we supply cigars to the Navy, every brand, every style. Worldwide.
That's crazy.
We sell every company's cigars from Padrones all the way down to Cuban Rounds or
the contacts you guys to get to the on base.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah. And you know, right now the base is based on sales, decide what's being sold.
Right.
You know, when I've had cigars in there that I thought were going to do really well, you know, that just didn't do well for that particular base, but they do well in Bethesda at their walk-in.
I think it depends on who's marketing it at that base, though.
You know, for the most part, most of the managers don't really do a lot of marketing.
Right,
they
don't
know a lot about cigars.
Yeah,
the Navy's deglamorization to tobacco and alcohol has prevented.
I've been trying to do events on base for years.
But I was at the.
I want to use something like what me and Brian got going on with you.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, we're not MWR or nothing like that.
Right.
You know, maybe we're a way to...
I haven't heard MWR since I got out.
I was at the package store the other day, and I was helping this kid pick out cigars because none of the managers could tell
me. Which one?
It was the one right off NOB.
So NOB.
Yep. Okay. So I was there helping him pick out cigars because he didn't understand which ones he should get, and none of the managers.
And that's a new walk-in humidor.
Right.
I think it's not even a year old.
No.
It's not even a year old.
No, and that one, of the three, I think NOB and...
Oceana.
Well, Little Creek. I would say, though, those two could be really big.
They could.
They could be bomb.
But there's nobody there who works there that knows.
Well, you know, with all the Airedales and Oceana, I mean, the market's got to be there.
It is.
It's got to be there. It's just not being tapped. Because you go talk to guys and, you know, what most guys here in Hampton Roads, they go to Emerson's.
Yeah.
Or there's some local smoke lounges here that really specialize on, what's that shit called? The... People are smoking it out of little machines.
Shisha or vape?
Vape stuff. Yeah.
And it was really, they popped up ever because of vape, and then the federal government from it shut that shit down.
Yeah.
So now they're kind of going more towards the cigar thing, and there's cigars I can get there at the smoke lounge that I can't even get at Emerson's.
Yeah.
Which is great because the boutique thing's kind of taken off.
I think it's funny. Yesterday, I took my reps to Emerson's.
So that's why you went.
Yeah.
Which one did you go to, by the way?
Virginia Beach.
Okay.
Hilltop by the oceanfront there?
No,
over on Virginia's Boulevard.
Yeah,
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, this is what most humidors look like. And see, the problem I'm having, and it's not really a problem, but you don't have planograms for humidors forever.
No.
I mean, generally, No one in the cigar industry has ever heard of that until the military comes along and Navy goes, oh no, we gotta have a plan of
rest. Yes, right.
We gotta have a plan of rest.
So yeah. Submit your 50 pages.
Yeah. You can't do that, man. I mean, it's so hard because there are times cigars are gonna be out of stock. This may be out of stock.
Right.
You know, they're shutting down cigar factories in Honduras right now, or they're talking about it, which is gonna affect a lot of
cigars. Because of COVID?
Yep.
Yeah.
Because of cigar manufacturers. I mean, because of COVID, but it's gonna affect a lot of cigar manufacturers. Mm. And that causes out of stocks. But it's like I tried to explain to these guys at Navy. I'm like, look, when we're out of stock, rest assured, Emerson's is out of stock of this same cigar. Yep. Everybody else is too. Yep. Because we're the biggest distributor of premium cigars in the U.S. We carry it all. If we can't get it, trust me, we're their biggest customer.
They're going to give them to you.
Yeah, they're going to give them to us.
Yeah.
And I buy them cheaper. And that's one way that it's easier for us to do business on Navy is because we buy in bulk.
So Ricky, yeah, because you're just shipping into how many bases? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. I can't count.
Oh, yeah, worldwide. I mean, from Sigonella to Bahrain to Djibouti. I mean, I just shipped cigars to Djibouti the other
day. You know what the capital of Djibouti is?
You're in it. You didn't expect me to come at you.
So, Rick, you talked about your Navy experience. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about your background, like where you came from? Just how you came from.
Prior to Navy?
Yeah, no, just in the Navy.
In the Navy, your Navy.
My Navy experience isn't as cool and glamorous as you guys.
I mean, just spit it real. Like,
I was a kid that...
There's some third-class petty assholes on here listening right now.
Right on, man, right on.
They need to hear from you.
Let me keep it real for you. You know, I came in the Navy thinking, holy shit, I'm 20 years old, 20 or 21. I was old in boot camp. I mean, honestly. I was
21 in boot camp.
I was the oldest motherfucker in boot camp, you know? And
I was 17, so y'all some old bitches.
Yeah, I'm 50. Yep. I'll be 51 in 2 weeks.
Oh, boy.
I'll be 51 in 2 weeks. Yeah. I don't feel it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I finished up boot camp, and, you know, I'm waiting. I wanted to be an ET, electronics tech, because I'd heard Navy has the best schools. And you know what? That's true. They do.
And it's the whole thing.
Yeah, I went to boot camp in Orlando, cruised up to Great Lakes to do my A school and C school, all the way through C school. And when I got done with that, my first wife, I've been married three times. my first wife, she was having like wicked complications with our firstborn. And they assigned me right out of school to a NAVRES center, a reserve center.
Wow.
In Great Lakes. And I stayed there for fucking ever.
No, oh, dang.
That's because the Navy does not know what to do. If you do not meet the cookie cutter plan.
Yeah.
You got to be full up around healthy.
Oh, yeah.
And no dependents. Yeah. And all that. Then they know what to do with you.
Right.
You give them one problem.
Oh, yeah. They're great. Then they're like, in a closet somewhere. Yeah.
Go watch those guys pick up trash for 3 years.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. You know, I worked on a shipboard simulator.
Yeah.
I was the only ET in the whole command. So I was the guy. I was the electrician's mate. I was the everything. Bosun's mate. I was low man on totem pole too as an ET3 coming out of school. They were just like, oh, okay, because most of these guys were sea dogs and on their shore rotation.
Yeah, they've been Navy for 4 or 5 years.
Oh yeah, that's right. And here I am. They're just like, oh yeah, fuck this kid. You're gonna work. I mean, dude, that place gets cold.
Chicago?
Oh yeah.
Jesus.
Christ. Oh yeah, man.
Now, I have shoveled more snow and blown more snow at that reserve center than I ever care to talk about.
I went to boot camp from April, I think it was like April 21st to June.
Mm-hmm.
And that shit was so wild there because the Great Lake Effect, whatever they call it, the lake effect out mm-hmm. there is wild.
Yeah.
There'd be days that it snowed fucking 4 inches in April, May. And then there'd be days that, you know, pour down rain. 87 degrees, humid.
Yeah.
You know, I remember one time we were marching to the galley, and we were in old ships. They have new ships there now.
Yeah.
And I was an old ship pilot. Well, you guys were in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you do, and you did. Rick, you had to carry your little rain pack in the back of your
rain jacket,
guard belt,
fucking
guard belt.
So three times in that mile march, we stopped because it rained, and they stopped us, put us at attention, we put our stupid fucking rain jackets on. And we'd march about 200 yards and the rain would stop and they would halt us and we'd fold those fucking things in a little perfect little rectangle, stow it. We did this shit 3 times. Like,
dude,
get out of here, man. Yeah, man. So, yeah, that weather's crazy out there.
It is crazy. You know, and then I spent almost all of my time there. I met some really cool people. I mean, one of my favorite people, man, was a BM1. He'd been in 25 years.
Crustiest. Saltiest fuck.
The saltiest old mother.
Yeah.
And
did he have hold fast on his hand?
A 25-year VM1, though.
Yeah, he was, dude. But
that's a sea dog.
And, you know, we were talking about that, too. And I was like, I mean, I'm chief. And he goes, oh, you know, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Charles. Yeah. You know, I mean, but Greg Vlasic, I mean, he was old then. So, I mean, fuck, he's got to be dead now. I mean,
yeah.
I hope not. I mean, he was one of my favorite people there.
Do you think that, because I've got sailors that I've, 16 years I've been in.
Yeah.
And a bunch of different unique situations. I'm a unique situation. I'm a perfect example of not only kind of fighting for what you want, for people fighting for me.
Right.
You know, I've got a hearing device magnet in the side of my head. Navy have been trying to send me home since 2009.
I read your story, man. That's inspiring.
And it's wild, honestly. But the example of it, though, right, is that when you get into this little hole of whether it's a family issue that puts you in a temporary hold, yep, or a medical issue or whatever, it negatively affects. You know, you could have been 20-something years, mm-hmm, chief, officer, something, right? But I don't know how you were motivated about the military when they...
Right.
When that was your experience in the military.
That was like your first one.
And right. I hate that. Yeah. One of the things that I despise the most, my command has this thing, and I get it, but if you can't build torpedoes, you gotta go stand gate guard. And these guys go stand watch for 4 or 6 hours a day, and that's their life for 5 days a week. And and it gets under me. But what do you do? I mean, you got to put them somewhere. Yeah. You're getting a paycheck, but
if that's your first Navy experience, it just demotivates shit out of you, man.
So my last year, in was interesting because we had a top secret library there.
Okay.
That we maintained, and I mean all the way up to NATO top secret. And I got my security clearance because of the school, and then they were like, "Well, fuck, Charles, you can run the. That could be another collateral duty for you." And I was like, "Oh, thanks, guys." So I was doing that, and I was building facility. I was doing everything, man. It was great. But the cool thing about that is the reservist would come up, and we had them up every other weekend. So every other weekend, I got a 3-day weekend. That's right. Because we were off on Mondays, you know, because we worked on Saturday, Sunday. So every other weekend, that was a 3-day weekend. That was pretty cool. So at my 5.5-year mark, detailer, ring-a-ling-a-ling, "Hey, Charles, it's time to rotate the back. See, we need to sign this extension here. You want to re-enlist?" And I'm like, fuck you, man. I'm done. I'm getting out.
Yeah, this is my Navy experience.
Yeah, and I did. I got out then.
So
and
you know what, man?
Yeah.
That would have been tough. So now were you old when you came in? You say old, right? But I know it was. I was 21 when I came in boot camp too. I cannot imagine being 26, a third class petty officer, going to sea with no warfare
plan.
Don't
know
how to take a shit because you don't know where the head's at.
Yeah, I'm just
So you probably made the right decision because the way your career planned out.
That'd have been an old ET3. Yeah. Right. Think about that at sea. Yeah. If I'd have gone to sea as an ET3 at 26,
they would ask you how many times you had passed.
Yeah, I'd have been. Like, I've been on restriction quite a bit.
Right.
So working with Ventura, Rick, what's your favorite cigar that they carry?
Without advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No hard sell. We just.
And it could be something they don't even carry anymore.
We just want to know what
actually,
you like.
No, actually, it's something we still make, and it's our Psycho Natural.
Natural.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I've even seen that one.
You haven't? Well, you're going to smoke one tonight.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I never had that one either.
Yeah, the Psycho Natural is probably my favorite smoke because it's a little bit different. The cool thing about Psycho is that it's made by Davidoff. You guys know this. And, one of the benefits of us being the largest distributor of cigars is that we carry every brand, right? We have a relationship with all these manufacturers, all these big names, from Rocky Patel to Davidoff to General Cigar, you name it. I mean, we carry it. So we have these great relationships. So when it's time, because we also own our own brands. You know, many people listening probably don't know that we also own our own brands. So we were able to choose the manufacturer.
You can be selective.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so Davidoff makes this cigar for us, and Hanke Kellner, a grand master blender for Davidoff. I mean, he is the OG blender, and he made this blend for us on all three of our Dominican cigars. The Nicaraguan is done by Indiana Ortez.
And that's normally like a darker cigar, right? For Nicaragua?
Yeah, this one typically is. Typically, this is a different kind of Nicaraguan, man. And we can talk about that in a little bit. But this Nicaraguan's a little bit different. But the cool thing about Psycho 7 is that it's seven different tobaccos from six different countries, right?
So that's what the seven comes from in the name?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And Psycho is...
me.
Three, well... Yeah.
We're all submariners, so we're all fucking crazy. Yeah.
So, the Psycho, P-S-Y-K-O,
yep.
P-S, that's Patrick, Sergio, the Y is and...
E.
K. Yeah, E.
Yeah.
K is for Kevin. And... one day, everybody was just looking at, they were trying to develop this brand, right? And they saw the initials they were writing down.
I'm sorry. Do you watch The Office?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the episode when Creed was the manager, and he was like, we're gonna make a bunch of words. You put a bunch of letters on the thing. And oh my God,
we're just figuring it out
right now.
Yeah, we just figured out.
Grab me a cube, man, would you?
Yes, sir. Yeah, real quick, guys. So normally, we've done this fucking twice. Thanks. This is the third time we've done it. Normally, what we do is we're sitting outside. We've got a stick, and we're drinking on whatever we're drinking on. And it's kind of like what we open the podcast up with, right? Mm. But it's hot as fuck right now, guys.
Yeah.
And it's actually a cool day today. Yeah. We were in the hundreds four straight days, and it's a little cooler, like 92 degrees or something like that. But we figured, hey, let's not. We got a little event going on for our local Hampton Roads guys here in about an hour. So we're just trying to stay in a cool house as much as we can. So we're sitting at the church bar out here in Virginia Beach. And, Rick was very gracious to bring some Elmer T. Lee, which is very hard to find, especially when you live out where we do, of single barrel sour mash Kentucky straight bourbon. So that's what we're drinking on right now. Rick's seen the hype that the Sailors and Sticks members have on the Leaf by Oscar. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to provide him one of those. He's cut that. We're sitting at the bar. He's just kind of, sucking it the way your grandpa did. Always.
Is anybody a cold draw anymore? Yeah. I mean, honestly.
I cold draw all the time. Yeah. I cold draw all the time, man.
He's over there cold drawing on his Leaf by Oscar Maduro and whatnot. So it's got a little senior guys that we're sitting here at the church bar. Full of bourbon and just having a great time.
We'll be smoking later.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be smoking later. Absolutely. So, all right. So, the Psycho 7 Natural.
Psycho 7 Natural.
Awesome. That sounds
good.
So,
seven tobaccos, six different countries. The Psycho 7 Natural, and the Connecticut is a lighter, smooth, creamy smoke, right? The Maduro's heavier.
Yep.
It's got that Mexican San Andreas wrapper on it.
Yeah. I'm a San Andreas guy, man. All that.
I tell you, we talk more about that because I love the Maduro too. Because after they get a little humidor time, that San Andreas wrapper, especially on bigger ring gauges like the Gordo, man, that is so sweet. You can just taste the sweetness.
So for someone, and full disclosure, I've probably been an avid cigar smoker for about 5 years, which is probably a rookie in most cases, but I feel like I get by. But the ring gauge size.
Mm-hmm.
Because I see the same blend, same wrapper, same binder,
but
they offer it in like three or four different ring gauges. Why is that? What changes when you do that?
Well, okay. The blender has to try and make sure they're getting the same proportions of that tobacco blend, if they're using a Nicaraguan, a Dominican, and something from Peru, right? In the filler, they came up with a blend in a Robusto, right? And they've got X amount of the
30 and whatever actually.
Right? So when they scale that to the next size, they gotta make sure they're doing the same thing. Trying to get that same percentage of tobacco in there so that the flavor profile stays the same.
Yeah, my buddy was telling me there's only certain types of guys that only do small ring gauges because they want to keep it.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. They want to stay true to the actual blend that they discovered,
But actually the size of the ring gauge doesn't actually change the flavor profile.
Oh, well, you try not to.
Okay, but that's the goal.
That's the goal. But sometimes it does, right? Yeah, sometimes it does. That's like, even in our cigars. That's like, I don't like the Maduro Robusto.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys. I don't smoke that way. But, in the Maduro, I like Toro or Gordo. And I don't know if it's psychosomatic, man. Maybe it's because in my head, I think the more surface area I have of that Mexican San Andreas wrapper, the sweeter it's going to be for me. Mm-hmm. You know, so. But what I like about the natural, and you guys will find this, it's more complex. You get more woody, more pepper on the front end, and then, man, you just get some floral notes towards the second, third. It's a great little cigar, man.
You know, it's funny talking about the different layers of smoke. So I got stuck in the, me and Brian have talked about this before on the podcast. So we get stuck in YouTube wormholes. We're the worst. Yeah.
especially the more you drink too, man, it's bad.
I heard, and I was watching this video, and I heard a guy say that, and it's crazy to me, I think it's a marketing thing, but I need you to tell me, that it's actually recommended that you only smoke about half to two-thirds of your cigar, that you're not supposed to smoke it till the end.
Bullshit. Yeah. I smoke my cigars.
If
I like the cigar, I'm smoking the motherfucker until I can't hold it.
Because I'm a cheap bastard, I'm sitting there like a fucking crackhead. Yeah. Like, that motherfucker tips, like, lighting it up at the end, right?
Yeah,
like
Tyrone Biggins.
And the thing that I love about cigars that you don't get from, say, smoking a cigarette or something, right? Because I smoked cigarettes for a couple years when I first joined the Navy, because the Navy gives you more breaks if you're a smoker.
I got a funny story about that. That's how I became a cigarette smoker, too.
Navy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Navy did it.
In my A school, man. Yeah.
Because you stand there, and all the smokers get a smoke break. Yeah. The union break, if you will.
Yeah.
But if you didn't smoke, you were still working and cleaning. Yeah.
We were in class. That was during my A school. We were in class, and the chief teaching the class goes, "All right, smoke break." And this was like week one. Everybody's like, smoke break, okay, cool. So they get up and they go out and they're smoking. They're standing on the
gazebo deal. Yeah,
no, the, like, no, this was back then. You could just go outside.
Smoke wherever you want.
Yeah, it was outside by the stairs on, you know, just it was in the, on the building. It was just out on the
grinder, whatever they call it.
He was overlooking the grinder. Yeah. But we're standing out there and he looks over and he goes, "Charles, you ain't smoking?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't smoke." And he goes, "Get the fuck back in there then." Next day,
you got a cigarette in your hand.
Yes, you had a cigarette in your hand.
I hear you.
Going through the trash. I forget what he told me to do. He told me to go do something. And I was
it's the fucking truth, man.
I was like, God,
it's
damn, the fucking truth.
Yeah, so the thing that I like about it is I'm enough of a cigar smoker to know that, you know, the first third of the cigar compared to the last third of the cigar is going to be different. It tastes different. Almost every cigar I've ever had, it tastes different that way.
And I'll tell you too, man. I can tell you this. The guy that said that probably smokes his cigar too hard, too fast. Because when you get to the last third of your cigar, if you've smoked it too hard or too fast, you get tars that are built up in here. Okay. All right? Or if you've let it go out and you relight it at, say, the halfway point, and you don't relight properly. And I just learned this 3-4 months ago, how to relight a cigar properly. It fucking matters.
I watched the whole thing about it. You know, I have a friend, Kyle Matteson. He's on the way right now. He didn't even know we're doing podcasts. He's a sonar senior chief out on the good ship Maryland. And I went back on, you know, Facebook gives you those memories and shit. Mm-hmm. And I found something from like 2010, and he made a comment like, never light your cigar with a lighter. You should use a match every time.
Yeah.
Right. And I know there's, you know, varying things about that, whatever, right? But one thing they did say is Zippos are probably one of the worst things to use. That you should use, like, a clean butane, a clean, like what you have there.
Bugatti.
But they were telling me that. They were like, in one of the videos I was watching last night in the YouTube wormhole was, you could create a bunch of tar and build up, if you will, in your cigar if you don't light it right.
Also, if you don't cut it right, in my opinion. Now, this will create some controversy. I don't think punching cigars gives you the full experience that blender intended.
So you think you should cut them?
Yeah, because when you punch, think about this. You're punching a hole in this, right?
Right.
And you're drawing air through the barrel of the cigar.
Like through 3 millimeters.
Right, right, through a 3-millimeter hole. All the smoke and all the tars come into that hole. Eventually, it's going to start to build up.
Right.
And it's going to taint.
Okay.
The way your cigar tastes.
I tried the punch a few times. One of my buddies, Kevin Alexander, he's coming over tonight. I'll introduce you to him so you can find who the puncher is.
All
right. He kind of got me on it, right? And I found that I was constantly relighting my cigar. Yeah. But what I found also is that, so I will tell you, Rick, that there's a couple, and this is a weird fucking thing, but there's been a few times that I felt like, you know, smoking a cigar, and I'm not liking the draw, I'm not liking what's going on. I'm usually a V cutter, so My favorite cut.
The Calibri one?
The Calibri, Warfighter sells it, right? And then Rick actually is,
I have
he's
one.
Got his cut too.
Yeah.
But I've seen before where I think I've probably done this about 3 times. I did a straight cut, and then I punched the straight cut.
Well, that's interesting. It probably gives you a lot more airflow.
And it gave more airflow, and I found I wasn't relighting the cigar as much, which is probably because I'm a wet smoker.
I
have to relight all over every 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
He's got the same one, Calibri. Yeah.
That's awesome. Nice. So
that was a gift from a group out in Switzerland.
I like it. So he pulled out his V-cutter, guys, that's very similar to the Warfighter Calibri. It's probably the same thing, just different logo. But I think this one's even better because it was like rose gold.
Yeah.
It looks like a rosé. Yeah.
It's not brass. It has to be copper.
It does look like a copper kind of look to it.
I don't know. It's heavy. It's heavy shit, though.
So, all right. So, we'll go ahead and get going here. So, as we mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, Rick is out in Kentucky, and he came out here to Virginia Beach for vacation. So, tell us about the trip out here. Did you fly? Did you drive?
No, I drove, man.
And was there anything crazy that happened on the trip out here? Was it pretty mellow?
Yeah, it's actually an easy drive, man. It takes me 6.5 hours to get here.
From your house?
Yeah.
Oh, that's enough for me to do on a 96 come visit you.
I'm out here a lot, bro. I just jump on 64 and...
Take the whole way?
The whole way, man.
Okay. Nothing crazy happened. No kids got sick.
No
flat tires.
Yeah. No, everybody slept the whole way, man. I was listening to talk
radio
the
whole fucking way. Sometimes that's the best,
though. Yeah.
That's the best way.
Yeah.
Crack the window. Well, you can't in this weather, but crack the windows a little bit.
Well, you know, I used to fly. And one of the last trips... Because I have to fly because I live in Kentucky. I live in eastern Kentucky in a little town called Belfry. And there's like 3,500 people. I mean, it's small, bro. I'm right on the West Virginia state line. So Kentucky here, West Virginia here. You know, it's right under it. So I'm right
in the shine.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I got a guy that legally distills moonshine. Right up the road for me, and we trade cigars and shit.
I hear you.
A little trading, man.
I hear you.
But anyway, I have to fly out of Charleston, West Virginia. So
been there before.
Yeah, when I fly out of that airport, I fly to D.C. and then to Norfolk.
Yep.
So if there's any layover, I'm usually like 5 hours in.
Yeah.
And it's just a pain in the ass sometimes. Yeah. And I can't bring all the stuff I want because I got to pack a bag, you know.
So just throw it back in the van
I'm just like,
drive.
Fuck it. I'm driving, man. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Because then I can smoke.
You can listen
to the radio. I can talk on the phone. I can work. I can answer emails. I can pull over and take a shit. I can do whatever I want, you know?
Yeah.
I can do what I want.
Yeah.
So, you know, shitting on an airplane is no easy task.
It's not fun either.
No, especially one of the little ones. You know?
You probably think puddle jumpers from Charleston to DC.
You know, I'm a pretty good sized dude, man. I'm six foot one, you know, and last year I was 245 pounds.
Oh shit.
You don't look it right now.
No, you don't.
I've lost 50 pounds.
Holy shit.
50 pounds, man.
See that? If you smoke, you lose weight, guys.
Cigars make you lose weight, make your dick bigger too.
I love it. That's awesome. So nothing crazy about that, but we are on his last day here, and we're really glad that he cut this time and
my wife said, do not come back to this hotel room. Fucking blackout drunk.
Oh man, that
so
might
we'll
be a
make
problem.
Sure he's not blacked out.
Maybe just a little drunk.
Yeah, but we do appreciate not only Rick coming out here, but his wife will probably never hear this podcast. But if she does on the way home, thank you for letting Rick come over here. It means a lot to us.
Amy.
It's Amy. Amy, thank you.
Yeah,
we love you.
Yeah,
you're beautiful. You're great.
It is beautiful, buddy.
And all that stuff.
So I married a woman that was 10 years younger than me this time.
Winning.
Yeah. So, Rick, we know you got all these hobbies, like you forge knives
and
you do a lot of stuff. Have you picked up anything besides that during this COVID time? Or tell us about your background about forging knives. How do you get in that and stuff like that?
Okay. About 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I don't recall. 3 or 4 years. My son, everyone has seen Forged in Fire.
Yes,
on
the
History Channel.
I love that show.
Yeah. Me too. We loved it. We were watching it, and my son, Alex, at the time, he was young, you know, he was like, he's my stepson, you know, but I've had him for 15 years. He's my kid, man. I love the boy. And he said, hey, we need to be doing this. He said, I want to learn how to do this. And you always want to try and...
Yeah, president.
And
You're like, hell yeah, we need to do this.
So, and I know this kid is never going to college. You know, the interesting thing about, I have 5 children, all right? And... The interesting thing about them is
They're all different.
They're all different, man. I have some that are in college, going to college, been to college, dropped out of college, smoking too much dope. You know, I mean, I got the full array. Okay?
You're the gambit.
And Alex is 16 now, soon to be 17, but he's not going to college. And I'm like, this kid needs to learn a trade.
A trade, yeah, right. Absolutely.
You know,
give him something to do.
Which is a lost art.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you this, man. I know lots of plumbers and HVAC guys that are making millions of fucking dollars. And then I have people that send me resumes every fucking day. They're just out of college, and they're looking for a job.
Yep.
Right.
And they're having a hard time finding a job with a college degree.
Working at Cheesecake. Working at Cheesecake.
They got to pay their fucking
students. Working at Cheesecake Factory.
Right. Right. So this country needs blue collar workers, man. Absolutely. People out there doing the damn thing.
What made us who we are.
So he wanted to learn to do this, and I'm like, you know what? I might be able to kill two birds here. I might be able to help this kid get into something. And now he's welding at Votech. And he's like welding. He's a good welder.
That's good.
So, but he forges knives as good as I do. We've been doing this together for 4 years.
Yeah.
So we started watching fucking YouTube and reading books on how to blacksmith and how to forge knives. Okay. No shit. We learned on YouTube.
Oh, nice.
You can learn so much. I changed my oil because of YouTube. It's crazy.
Well, you know, you told me that the other day, and I was like, change your oil. I've been changing my oil. I've been doing my fucking brakes, man. I do everything, bro. Yeah. What are you talking about? I've been doing that shit for years.
Yeah.
So, YouTube, if I'd have had YouTube when I was 16, I'd be a goddamn billionaire right now.
Yeah.
What's that steel they talk about, like, that's the strongest steel? That's
Damascus?
Yeah, Damascus, yeah. Like,
it's pretty. Yeah. It's not necessarily the strongest steel out there.
Yeah.
It's flexible.
Okay.
And it does impart... You know, the beauty of Damascus is that it's multiple layers of different types of steel.
Okay.
It's like a mild steel, a hardenable steel. Okay. Or it could be two hardenable steels that are just different colors, you know. And you forge weld them together, fold it, twist it, whatever, and then continue forge welding to get layer count up. But it looks awesome. In my opinion, you know, I've only done one Damascus knife, and I think they're overrated.
Yeah, overpriced. I mean, it seems to be a lot of hyped up stuff.
I mean, I can make you a knife out of 1084 that will perform with Damascus.
Yeah, so you know what you need to... I'm just thinking about this right now.
Yeah.
So we have a buddy of ours, well, buddy of Brian's, really.
Sales.
His name's John, and he got into forging, and
The ashtray guys, I've talked to him. We talked on Instagram. He told me to hit you up. We talked a little bit.
He was kind of mad at me. He's like, you didn't tell me Rick Ford's knives. I was like, man, I forgot. That's my bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I will tell you this. During COVID, all I have done is refurb the house.
Oh, I'm with you. You're looking at all kinds. This floor right here?
I'm fixing to do it.
2,000 square feet of...
The first thing I saw when I came in here was that floor. I was like, I like that color. I need to take a picture of that before I leave because that's going to go good with my cabinet.
Tattooed Bob Vila over here fucking touching up his house and shit.
Me too, man. I learned how to do shit online, man. I'm just teaching myself as I go.
YouTube the fuck... And I don't even read the instructions when they come in the products. I just go to YouTube.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, we're at the 43-minute mark. This has been so fun. I can't believe it's been 43 minutes.
I know.
We're going to end this with rapid fire. So Rick's probably listened to our podcast before. Maybe he hasn't. And when we end our podcast with rapid fire, it's a bunch of rapid questions. They're going to be off the wall. Just, you know, first thing that comes to your mind. And we're going to go with this for a few. We usually do about 4 or 5. I think me and Brian have about 4 or 5.
Might get bonus round.
So you might get like a bonus round with it. So I'll go ahead and kick it off, Rick.
Okay.
I can't wait to hear this. What celebrity annoys you the most?
Joy Behar. Fuck that guy.
Oh, man. Okay. Good answer.
I would set her on fire.
That's so funny. It took him half of a half of a second to get that fucking answer.
He was already ready.
Yeah.
Okay, Rick. If you were to give a wedgie to any historical figure, who would it be?
A wedgie?
Yeah. Like if you could just wedgie somebody.
They could be live or dead.
Yeah, live or dead. You just pick which one. Who would you do it to?
Bonus points for scene.
I don't know, man. Maybe Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Here's why. Because Abe Lincoln, there are reports of him being homosexual. And I don't really care about that. I mean, that's great. But you know what? You're going to have to man up and do your shit, man.
Okay.
Come out of the closet, bro. I know it wasn't acceptable back then, but whatever. Be a man. You're going to do your shit.
And okay. You need a wedgie also.
I'm going to jerk his drawers up.
All right. Abe Lincoln.
All right. Fashion trends you don't get.
Mom jeans for teenage girls.
Yeah, mom jeans.
Talk about where they go up to like
they
the
go
belly.
Yeah. Solid.
What the fuck, man? That's stupid, man. My wife and I were just talking about that.
I'm glad that you said that.
I like hip huggers where the thong hangs out.
Hey, you're a man's man.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm really glad you said that, guys. So, y'all know, if anyway y'all know me, I'm from the West Coast. I'm from California. We have this flat bill. Even, I would argue, curved up is probably thing going on. And I was really hoping that Rick wasn't going to say anything about that. So
I called it.
Bonus back. Points for Rick.
No, it's fine.
Brian, you go.
I did mention it earlier, though.
He did, though. He did.
So, Rick, if you could pick a sport that was mandatory for them to add alcohol to, what would that be?
Take a shot when you make a touchdown.
Yeah, if you have to take a shot after you hit a home run or like anything else, like
no,
mandatory.
I think it would be more fun to watch golf.
Oh, fuck
yeah. If they were drunk. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, because that's how right. I golf.
Yeah.
I golf sober.
Yeah, but I mean, think about all the bullshit shots. I mean, because you watch golf on TV, man. Those guys are pros.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I mean, they hit shit I can't.
Yeah, but then, boom, you throw some alcohol in the mix, teeing off, Phil Mickelson dislocates a fucking hip or something, you know, blah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, I like that answer.
That's a fun answer right there. Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. All right. Would you rather work 8 hours standing or work 10 hours sitting?
Eight hours standing.
Yeah. So I'm the same way, man. Like, so I have one of those the little desk deals that
a Faraday desk.
There you go.
Yeah.
I have one of those at the command. I don't know why. The Navy somehow. We probably September.
How'd you requisition that shit?
The whole command did, right?
Oh.
But I stand there. I stand there at my office, and I work 10, 11 hours a day. I can't sit. It's part of it's because I'm high strung as fuck. It's hard to resist.
OCD, ADHD, you name it. I got all NDs.
I think we should go to the bonus round with Rick. At least get
one.
Yeah,
we're going to keep going. We're going to keep going.
All right, so Rick, if you, Nick, and I were in an Uber, what would you say to embarrass me and Nick?
To the Uber oh, interesting. Very interesting.
What would I say to embarrass you and Nick?
Have you ever watched the Kevin Hart, Ice Cube, and Conan O'Brien? Yeah.
This is a tough one, bro.
Yeah.
Because we just met. I mean,
Maybe he needs the answer later tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Not enough Elmer Lee.
Yeah.
First time he met us.
I don't know. That's a tough one, man.
I mean, you could be like, no, I'm not going to shower. I'm not going to shower
he
with
passes.
You tonight.
Pass. Give me another one. Pass. Give me another one.
All right. Okay. Name one thing you own you wish you didn't. God, fuck, I bought that and that shit's stupid as fuck.
This little brown dog.
Oh, brown dog.
Ginger.
Yeah.
Ginger from Gilligan's Island?
I would stomp that dog's guts out. My son didn't love her so much.
No.
If my son didn't love this dog so much, I mean to tell you, he loves her. My 16-year-old son. And this dog is like 13 years old. I'm praying for this dog to die. And you know what? She's not a bad dog. She's just weird. She's not like my other dogs. You know, she's not normal. So, yeah. Ginger. So all you PETA people.
Sorry, Ginger. You're shipwrecked.
Yep, sorry, Ginger.
You got two more?
Yeah, go
two
ahead. More.
All right. If you were to write a book about yourself, what would you call it?
Ooh.
Rick James, bitch.
No. No, actually, I wouldn't.
The bitch Rick James?
Nope.
No. That's not
Rick,
good either.
The bitch James. No. Trying to give you ideas.
I'm just waiting for you to run out of ideas. Run out.
Yeah.
No, it would be, the title would be, The Common Denominator Is You, Stupid. In all the fucked up shit that you've ever...
Meaning you as you.
Oh, man.
I hear you.
Yeah.
That's fucking...
That's an epiphany I had.
I like that.
We can talk about that shit later, too. An epiphany, I've told you I've been married 3 times, right?
Yeah.
And all the fucked up shit that's happened in my life, when you look back, you know, at some point you have to realize every man has this moment where he goes, shit, the fucking common denominator in all the bad shit that's happened to me is me.
Take ownership.
I have.
Yeah, man. Rick
I hear
Charles.
You.
Take ownership.
I
like it.
I feel you.
That's
all I'll say about that is I feel you.
Yeah, Nick, finish it off, man.
Yeah. All right. So, damn. I don't even like this last one that I have. because I kind of know where it is.
I definitely want it, though.
Yeah. All right. It's not very fun, though. It's not. Mm. But explain your office workspace.
Oh, which one? The one here or the one in California?
Your COVID.
Oh, where I'm at now?
Yeah, headquarters, Kentucky.
it doubles as a guest room. I have shit on the walls like this, pictures, and I have some empty. I have a lot of empty bourbon bottles.
Yeah.
Because I move them from my liquor cabinet when they're empty, I move them from there downstairs to upstairs. I have flags on the wall, picture of Ronald Reagan.
I smell hippies.
No, I do have some incense.
That smell so like patchouli oil.
Maybe you know, and I have a lot of fragrance in there. I'm a little bit of a fragrance whore. Yeah.
Oh, I am too. I got the Scentsy burning over here.
I'll tell them myself. I own 500 different fragrances.
Oh boy.
I collect and have been for 10 years now. It's fucking, it's a goddamn sickness.
What are you doing with empty bottles?
Fragrance?
No, of the bourbon.
Nothing. Looking at them.
So I've got. So I do the same thing. I don't have 500 of them, but I probably have about 30. And I'll show you when we go outside and smoke, but I started making citronella candles out of them. There's a kit that you can buy, and I'll show you.
Great idea.
Amazon, it's like $30 for 6 kits.
Yeah.
And all you do is you buy an $8 bottle of citronella, and you put it in there, and you make this little kit deal.
Yeah.
Burn at night. Looks cool.
See, I like that shit.
Looks eccentric. And
I'm fixing to do all kinds of shit in my backyard. New pool? So, yeah.
You're going to do an in-ground?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. Party at Rick's next summer.
Yeah.
Hell yes.
All right. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that concludes Rapid Fire. That concludes our interview with Rick Charles, Director of International Markets of Ventura Cigar Company, and most importantly, member of Sailors and Sticks.
Yep.
He's proud of that. We're proud of that. Me and Brian are absolutely fucking mind blown about what this has become, and there's more to come, obviously. But again, we hope you guys like this. A little bit longer for a member interview, but it was absolutely worth it.
Yeah,
we could have went 2 hours.
Yeah, man.
We got about 15 minutes. We got to start hosting people.
Yeah.
So we got to get our shit straight. Okay. But this is Nick Church.
Brian Brown.
Rick Charles.
This is Saturday Sticks Podcast. We out.